Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley, that dude. Coming up, we'll give you our thoughts on Troy Aikman calling Jerry Jones and the Cowboys dysfunctional.
And give you the latest on the Le'Veon Bell saga. But we start every day with a Whitlog. So what you got today, big dog?
Let me start here. Dak Prescott was terrible last night.
Terrible.
He looked like a homeless man's Case Keenum. Prescott's confidence is shot. He's afraid to let it loose down the field. He blew the game in the first quarter when he threw into double coverage for absolutely no reason and cost the Cowboys a chance to take a two-score lead. The Cowboys lost to Tennessee 28-14 on Monday Night Football in front of their hometown fans, Jerry Jones' disbelieving eyes, and Jason Witten's new rug. It's fair to blame Dak Prescott for the loss. He turned the ball over twice and made no big plays.
It's disappointing. I mean, we just didn't get the job done. We all got to do better, and it starts with me. It starts with me first all the way.
Prescott is right and wrong. He does have to play better, but it doesn't start with Prescott. It starts with strategy. It starts with the game plan. It starts with the guys on the headsets, head coach Jason Garrett and offensive coordinator Scott Linehan. The Cowboys' game plan was even worse than Dak Prescott. Anybody remember the Cowboys' offense that scored 40 points on Jacksonville in mid-October? Dak Prescott threw two touchdown passes, ran 11 times for 82 yards, and another score. Cole Beasley caught 9 passes for 100 yards and 2 TDs. Ezekiel Elliott carried the ball 24 times for 106 yards and a score. Jerry Jones loved that offense, and just about everyone concluded incorporating Dak into the running game made Dallas's offense more difficult to defend. Last night, Garrett Linehan scrapped that entire strategy, every piece of it. Garrett Linehan coached as if the Cowboys acquired Jerry Rice in his prime during the bye week. They acquired Amari Cooper, a very good receiver, an upgrade over what Dallas had, but you don't remake your offense for Amari Cooper. You accentuate or enhance it. Last night, Cole Beasley disappeared. He wasn't targeted until the fourth quarter and the game was out of hand. Last night, Prescott disappeared from the running game. He didn't run the ball until the fourth quarter and the game was out of hand. Last night, the Cowboys repeatedly jammed Zeke into the gut of Tennessee's stingy run defense on first down and kept forcing Dak to throw on third and long. Dak Prescott was awful last night. His first quarter interception turned the momentum of the game. His third quarter fumble put Dallas in a hole it would never escape. But Jerry's still all in on his quarterback.
He is completely capable. I didn't know that 2 years ago. Listen, Dak is the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. He's young, and he's going to get extended.
All right, Jerry's in some denial with that statement. Dak's performance has to shake confidence in the third-year quarterback. But Jerry is likely starting to realize you can't fix the Cowboys or develop a franchise quarterback until you fix the coaching problem in Dallas. Jason Garrett is a bigger problem than Dak Prescott. All right, joining the desk now are NFL analysts Tony Gonzalez and D'Angelo Hall. Marcellus, am I wrong? Jason Garrett a bigger problem than Dak Prescott?
Yeah, you're wrong. I'm sorry, I was a little distracted because your topic sentence was amazing and your thesis was amazing. Here's your topic sentence. Dak Prescott was terrible last night. All right, respect. And here's your thesis. Dak Prescott was awful. Okay. Why else talk? Like, what else are you talking about? You're blaming the sidelines, the same sidelines that, 3 years ago, made Dak Prescott, the same Dak Prescott that we're still holding on to that rookie year. Who was the coach then? Was it Jason Garrett? Oh, yeah. Who was the offensive coordinator? Was it Linehan, Scott Linehan? Yeah, it was. So the same guy that made you is all of a sudden now the guy that breaks you. I just go back to my own career and everyone else that I've ever played with. If we had consistency on the sidelines and we had success with that same coaching staff, they're not to blame necessarily when it comes down to us not producing. You gotta look in the mirror sometimes. And Dak Prescott throughout his career, even if you want to respect fully his rookie season, has never been amazing as a quarterback. He was protecting the ball, he was winning games, and he had a very productive rookie season. Exceeded expectations. But since then, has been average at best, and that's being respectful to a guy who did win his rookie season. For me, I'm not looking to the sidelines. I'm not going to do what Dallas has always done, blame the coaches. Start looking at the guys who have had success at times with this staff and needs to return to that, or they need to be held accountable.
I mean, I don't think Dak played terrible. I mean, he threw one interception that was awful, that a starting quarterback who we're saying gets it and has the potential to be a franchise quarterback should never make. But I've seen those guys still make that throw because they lock in and they say, hey, this is the play we've worked all week. It's always worked in practice. I'm throwing it no matter what.
Yeah.
And so that was one of those situations where he threw that ball no matter what. And it was god awful. It was. But I don't look at this game and say, man, if Dak wasn't the quarterback, they would win. I look at it and I say, if this play calling was just a little bit better, they win. They win this game, or at least they have a chance to win this game. And you don't think so?
How does Dak Prescott disappear from the running game? He had been a big part of the running game, and they had committed to that, and then, boom, it goes away.
What do you have, 2 carries for 11 yards?
Yeah, and one of them was a scramble, I know for sure.
It makes no sense the way they're paying him, but I'm a big believer in a body of work, okay? You got to, and that's why I don't like judging a guy after 1 year or a guy in his contract season having a bunch of sacks or making a bunch of plays, because I'm like, what have you done for a complete body work over the last couple, 2-3 years? Mm-hmm. And so looking at these guys, Jason Garrett, he's an 8-8 coach. That's all there is to it.
Yeah.
I think he's got to go if you want to see a difference in Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott, what have you done since you had that great offensive line? You have not performed. That line has gotten hurt. Therefore, your play has declined, and he needs an offensive line in order to be effective. Now, they could help him with the play calling because he did play well a couple weeks ago. But even still to this point, I'm not sure he's my franchise quarterback. For Jerry Jones to say that this is our guy going forward, I'm like, whoa, wait a second. You're going to give this guy $100 million, and you look at what he's done. At the very least, give him, he's got his contract year next year. Bring in some new coaches. Get an offensive coordinator, someone like Norv Turner, what he's done for Cam. Cam is all of a sudden looking like an MVP again because he's got a really good offensive coordinator again. Let's see Dak in that scenario and then give him the money. Otherwise, both of them at this point, for their body of work, I'm like this. I'm like, both of y'all got to go.
You're on an island, Marcellus.
I'm not on an island because that wasn't – I love Tony Gonzalez. That wasn't fact-based. Jason Garrett, Jason Garrett is not an 8-8 coach.
He is an 8-8 coach.
He's 12 games over 500. If we're going to call it like we're going to call it, let's call it for real. Okay, I'm just saying, that's not 8-8. Look, he's a winning coach, okay? And Dak Prescott, by the numbers, and I respect what he's saying about body of work, we got so caught up in that rookie season. But everything worked out for him on the offensive side of the ball. Think about it. He played under Romo's system. And it's amazing if you play under Romo's system and it works for you, where's the regression coming from when they actually adjust the system to you? How do you regress in that system?
But Marcellus, he was under Romo's system that rookie year, right?
They didn't expect him to start, right.
Okay. That was Romo's system. But why was that system successful? Dak didn't pass but for 230 yards a game. Why was that system successful? It was because they had an offensive line. Mm-hmm. That team was built a certain way.
Right.
And they were able to run the ball.
Yeah.
They aren't doing that now. That offensive line is nowhere near what they expected it to be. And so for them, yeah, Dak can still be the guy. Why? Because we need to get the O-line better, healthy. We need to get, like, they basically have money tied up in O-linemen who aren't playing.
Yeah,
some for health reasons, some for health
reasons. But y'all watching soap operas. We saw this happen with Mark Sanchez.
Wait a minute. This dude ain't Mark Sanchez.
I ain't saying he is, but watch the parallels. Okay. We saw the running game there. We saw the strong defense for them, but an offensive line that was giving him protection. And we saw that. And then we started saying, you know what? He's okay. He's pretty good. We started to exaggerate our expectations. And then what happened? When you don't have all those pieces around you, a franchise quarterback can cover up those deficiencies. A franchise quarterback. I mean, not just a quarterback. And if he's a franchise quarterback, as Jerry Jones is testifying, when are you going to cover up a deficiency on that offensive side of the ball?
Marcellus, I am leaning your way in terms of Dak Prescott not a franchise quarterback.
Okay.
But I just, for me, it's hard to evaluate Dak Prescott and give up on him because I don't think Jerry's planning on giving him $100 million. I think they're going to give him a Case Keenum-like contract, 2 or 3 years, some sort of extension. And I think if I were Jerry, I would pump the brakes. I'd let me see what happens the last 8 games.
Right.
But for me, Cole Beasley didn't get a target until the fourth quarter. They had been relying on this guy all year. Dak Prescott doesn't run the ball. I'm looking at this coaching staff like, I know we got Amari Cooper. And I thought Amari looked pretty good, looked savvy with his route running on. But damn, I'm not throwing my whole offensive strategy out the book and everything I've done all year because Amari Cooper showed up.
Wait a minute. Y'all acting like in a progression that he doesn't have the option to go to Cole Beasley. Wait a minute. When plays are coming, Tony Gonzalez was next to me, so I got somebody to tell
you about
this. It
was certain times for watching that game, though, where he just stayed on Amari the entire time.
And that's on Dak?
Like, bro, on Dak.
That's
on Dak, but I guarantee, man, he was told during that week of preparation, he's going to be open. This is where we want the ball to go. And, yes, he has to change sometimes when he's covered.
Hit your second progression.
Both of them. I'm telling you, I'm going to keep – because I agree with both you guys. Like, right now, both of them are mediocre. They're just both mediocre. That's all there is to it up to this point. Now, if something can change going forward, then let's see it. But right now, Jason Garrett, well, how many playoffs has he been to? Has he won a playoff?
Twice.
He's been
twice.
I think it's three. Two or three. And two of them have been wild cards.
Yeah, I thought twice and one win.
One win. I know, one win.
It's not great. Dak Prescott, it's just not great so far. But it's only his third year. Maybe he can get better. But up to this point, without that offensive line, he looks very pedestrian. He looks like an average quarterback. For me, I think the worst thing that could happen to a franchise is getting just a good quarterback. Because now you're handcuffed to that guy. It's not going to ever get you to that Super Bowl, to that bit. You need to, I would say, roll the dice. Let's keep going back to the well. Let's go get a quarterback and go get a franchise quarterback until we can get to the Super Bowl.
Dak Prescott got locked in on a dig route when there was a wheel route wide open for a touchdown. They even showed the replay. But I mean, that's on Jason Garrett, and it's on Jason.
Let me tell you why. I think he's lost confidence because clearly they spent the bye week and just came up with a completely different strategy than what they had been doing all season. And so Dak, he looked like a robot out there that was scared. And so he was focusing in on one or two reads. He was afraid to let it rip downfield and to take those chances. I think it's because there was so much chaos during the bye week. New offensive line coach. Clearly, they decided we're going to feature Amari Cooper and we're going to de-emphasize Cole Beasley, his security blanket. I think all of that had Dak rattled, and that's why I'm saying the coaching staff goes first, and then Dak follows.
I can't believe this. Y'all are some revisionists up here. Because after week one, when they lost to Carolina, Jerry Jones went on record and says, I want my quarterback to play more like that quarterback in Cam Newton. Remember that?
Yeah, right.
Because the game plan was exactly what we saw last night. The game plan was not Dak Prescott run out the pocket, extend plays, and hit every receiver. It was exactly what you saw last night. What happened was they changed the game plan, and they had some success. The 40 points you talk about in scoring against Jacksonville. But even Dak didn't have an amazing game. He did well running out the pocket, but not amazing, not 300 yards, not 3 touchdowns. So the point is, their game plan consistency has always been the same. Inconsistency. And now that's
my point.
Yeah, and now we're saying you've had success going both ways. And you've also had moderate success in comparison to what a franchise quarterback looks like. So if you're measuring Dak based on numbers of rookie season and issues around him, he's successful. But if you measure him against all the other quarterbacks who have to still look at their team, find issues, and correct them and still perform, he is not of that standard. It's that simple.
As a D lineman, would you rather chase Cam Newton in the pocket or have Cam Newton play against Cam Newton or play against Tom Brady? As a DN, as a pass rusher.
I mean,
for you to even think about that.
Two evils.
For you to even think about that question.
Yeah.
You ask a DB, or a receiver who you'd rather have throw you the ball, a Cam Newton or a Tom Brady, because he's a great passer, right?
Yeah.
But for you to even have to think about that tells you how hard it is to stop a scrambling quarterback or a mobile quarterback.
Very difficult.
And for them not to want to utilize that, it goes to what Whit's saying, man. It makes no sense. Mm. And to put 40 points up doing it that way and still not want to do that?
Most mobile quarterbacks have hell to pay. Ask Deshaun Watson taking the bus.
At this
hell to pay.
He's a little bigger. At this point with Dak Prescott, though, because, again, right now all the evidence says he's not a supreme franchise quarterback, then take the risk. If he gets beat up, so what? It's the game of football. You're not paying this guy a bundle of money. Now's the time to let him run out there and take the risk.
Yeah, otherwise, he'll never be as good as he could be, because I don't think he cannot sit in the pocket like that. And there's nothing wrong with that. Just like nothing Cam Newton. When Cam Newton was trying to say, I'm going to sit back in the pocket, conserve my body, I'm like, okay, well, then Superman's gone. You're not going to be Superman anymore. Hmm. You're going back to Clark Kent. So use your strengths. And I know it might cut your career a little bit shorter. I'm sorry.
But you'll have a job. Sorry. I mean, guys feared RG because he had the potential to run. And then when he came, I don't want to run no more. I'm just going to be a pocket passer. Mm. Dude didn't play football last year. Mm. I love the way he has a job now in Baltimore, but like Tony said, it might cut your career short. At least you'll have a career.
Time for a big story with Locke and Wiley. Tony Gonzalez and D'Angelo Hall are back. It's returned to Dallas, where a lot has been made of who's to blame for the Cowboys' struggle this year, especially after last night's ugly loss to Tennessee. And while most of the talk on this show is focused on Dak Prescott and Jason Garrett, now Cowboys legend and Fox's own Troy Aikman says the blame may actually reside elsewhere.
I've heard Jerry say, okay, look, we're going to do it differently. I'm going to do it differently. You know, I can no longer, but it's the same. Nothing changes. And that to me is the bigger issue. Beyond, yes, coaching is important, personnel, all those things are important, but how are you going about evaluating, how are you going about running the organization? And I talk to people who have been inside the building and have a pretty good understanding of how things are run. And in a lot of ways, there's a lot of dysfunction. And that has to change if this team is going to be able to compete on a consistent basis like the teams that you look to around the league that seemingly are in the hunt each and every year.
That's a powerful statement.
Pow.
And I look
from the Cowboy.
Yeah. From the Cowboy. Mm. I'm a Jerry Jones guy.
Yeah.
But when I hear a Troy Aikman, basically how I translate that, he's Jerry's Al Davis. He's the modern day, the new Al Davis, and he's the problem within the organization. I hear Troy Aikman say that, and it's hard for me to come up with a comeback, because clearly, Troy has a relationship with Jerry, has a lot of respect for Jerry.
Right.
This is a mammoth shot.
You have nothing else to say, right?
It's a mammoth shot.
Man, well, who was the song that said, if you have friends like this, you don't need enemies? I mean, look, respect to Troy Aikman, whether he's an ambassador of the Cowboys. We certainly think of him when we think about Cowboys and their greatness. But I still stress patience. And I stress patience in the cycle of success. Let's keep this in sync with other story franchises in American sports. Let's start with baseball and Mr. Steinbrenner and the Yankees and their 18-year drought. And everyone said he was a meddling owner. Remember, they won in 78, and then they had to wait to 96. Well, in the 80s, a lot of people wanted him out of there. In the early 90s, a lot of people wanted him out of there, and then things worked out. Let's go to the Lakers and Dr. Buss. Now, and that's a sport where you can have more control on the court. You get the right players, things can work out. Still, 11-year drought. And a lot of times in the middle of those dark days for the Lakers, people are saying, hey, what's up with ownership? Complaints going upstairs. Cowboys, you look at them, 23-year drought in terms of championships. But don't forget that they won 3 out of 4 one time. And who was the owner of that team? One Jerry Jones. And Jerry Jones, to me, is still innovative. It's still next level in terms of what he is as a businessman and as an owner. And I have a story, but I'm going to share this microphone with y'all. But I got a story that probably would silence most critics of Jerry Jones after I hear my other
I just want to ask one question. I just want to cut you off and ask. with Stephen Jones, the director of player personnel.
Now, he was a little baby.
What?
He was in the stroller.
Who was it? Was it Gil Brandt, I think? Was it him?
Yeah, yeah.
A Hall of Fame front office guy?
Right.
Is that who it was?
I'm listening.
Okay.
But who empowered him?
Carry on.
Jerry Jones empowered him, right?
Now he's got his son
in there. The only argument is, when you talk about evaluating talent, like, Stephen Jones, how are you qualified to be the
Is Ezekiel Elliott not a talent?
I mean, God, my son could have got that right.
Oh, hey.
I mean,
you got a job with the Cowboys
then. It's certain picks that you, I mean, you're supposed to get right. That's an easy one.
Okay.
It's the other ones that we're like, man, this dude didn't pan out. Or he's not the kind of player you anticipated him to be. Like Rico Gathers. Come on, man. I'm not drafting that dude. Are you kidding me?
I'm with you.
Because you wanted a basketball player? Come on, man.
He wanted the next Tony Gonzalez.
Tony Gonzalez don't grow on trees, man. Like, that's the thing. Jerry sees something. Oh, let's try that. Let's do that. Like, I don't really see rhyme or reason. And having watched this team from afar over the years of having to compete against them, you can definitely say that, I mean, there's some dysfunction going on in that building. I mean, no one says what Troy said about Dallas. It's almost like a cult. Like when you go down there, you drink the Kool-Aid, and for some reason, no one critiques Jerry Jones. Like me being a Washington Redskins guy, for years I heard Dan Snyder take massive criticism for seemingly doing what Jerry has done for 23 years, and no one's ever said a word about Jerry.
Because they're not the same. They're not analogous. First of all, that offensive line that was drafted. Who drafted them? Second of all, you want to talk about what they did at the defensive positions. Did a good draft this year. Jalen Smith took a
looked
risk
like
on him.
Trash last night. But
well, yeah, that one. Last night was not the case.
He looked like trash.
Well, obviously, there's some dysfunction going on. And the reason why is because of ego. I mean, Jerry Jones has a massive ego, okay? Yeah. And this goes back a long time. Troy was there when they were winning those championships. Remember, they fired a famous coach that we worked with on Fox named Jimmy Johnson. Mm-hmm. And Jerry Jones has come out and said, I let my ego get in the way, and I regret that. And I think it's happened ever since then. And these former players, Michael Irvin, Troy Aikman, all of them, they're getting frustrated now because they want to see the star back to where they think it could be. And it'll never happen as long as Jerry is doing what Jerry does. It's his team, though. I don't blame him. You bought the team. Yeah. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah, it's
but it's not working. And his ego is too big to get out of the way. He enjoys being in the spotlight. He's the most famous owner in all sports in America. Mm-hmm. And I think he enjoys that. He likes having his own radio show.
Marcellus, before you go again, I want to just add, you guys three are parents. And I think D'Angelo's part about Stephen Jones gets to the heart of the issue. He's empowered his son.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry actually played college football. I don't know if his son has any attachment, legitimate attachment, other than being Jerry's son to football. I think the nepotism and empowering your son in that way could be what Troy's talking about.
You're talking to the wrong dude here, bro. I'm a huge proponent of nepotism. My son is 3 years old and can't complete a sentence. But when I'm done up here, the next Speak for Yourself edition, my son will be sitting in this seat. I don't give a damn if he says something right or wrong. I love it. That's why you have a last name. We share this experience, brother. I'm not going there. I'm not going there.
I tell my kids right now, you ain't got nothing coming right now.
You better go earn it yourself.
That's New Testament over here. I'm Old Testament. Everybody gets it. I will say this, though. The Lakers right now, trying to find Showtime 2.0 and that drought. I mean, we live it. The Yankees right now, as the Boston Red Sox wins another championship the last 15 years. We see this with these story franchises. There was a day when New England had the darkest history. There was a day when Golden State had the darkest history. Things are cyclical, and we're just not patient through that
cycle. Let me correct this. Stephen Jones played linebacker at Arkansas.
Oh, that counts. That counts.
Well,
he was good in high school, at least.
Did he play? Was he a walker?
He was good in high school, at least.
No.
One of my favorite quotes is when somebody's talking about their way of thinking or their way of doing things, even my kids, I tell them this all the time. Okay, great. How's that working out for you? How's it serving you? Is it going well for you, thinking that way? Is it working out? And in this case, no. It's not working out, so you better start looking for different ways to win because it's not happening the way it's going right now. And Jerry Jones has a lot of strengths. I mean, he's done the most for the NFL out of anybody. The NFL is where it's at today because of Jerry. He's got to stick to those strengths, bring somebody in there, a new coach, I think Jason Garrett does have to go, and to come in there and let go, get out of the way. Bring in Jimmy Johnson again and get out of the way so you can go win championships.
Marcellus, you teased a Jerry Jones story. You going to tell us the story?
It's just to the next level genius of the businessman, which may be a part of the ego, which may be a part of the problem. I'll give you the story like this. Just this weekend, I was out in Buffalo talking to the New Era headquarters executives, and I was just looking at all the all the memorabilia and all the signatures and everything, and I was like, which one sells the most? Duh. Cowboys, okay? I was like, oh, that's great. And it's like, but the Cowboys have a unique deal with the NFL and with their licensing. They opt out where every other team is opted in to the revenue sharing. Think about that. 31 teams, 31 markets are saying, hey, we don't want to get caught up in the wins and losses category, so we just want to take revenue sharing. And the Cowboys are like, no. Pay us, sell us your merchandise, and we'll take care of the rest. Jerry Jones has always been that guy. Deion Sanders, remember his contract? And everyone was like, how were you able to sign Deion Sanders to that mega contract? He's like, simple. Cash, signing bonus, and prorated. And every other owner was like, oh, my God. That was 20 years ago. To this day, he continues to marvel other geniuses and billionaires. Look at his stadium. I'm just thinking that maybe sometimes he gets caught up in that sauce. It's always going to be good for him as a Dallas Cowboys owner. Maybe that is clouding his vision just a little bit.
All right. I owe Stephen Jones an apology.
Yes, you do.
Play football at a higher level than me. I apologize. All right, it's time to spark the conversation, sponsored by the Capital One Spark Card. Tony Gonzalez and D'Angelo Hall are back. Let's go to Pittsburgh, where the Le'Veon Bell saga rolls on. After Bell sent a tweet about leaving Miami yesterday, a lot of people speculated he could be heading back to the Steelers, but reportedly Bell hasn't even contacted the team and isn't expected to report this week. Even still, the Steelers haven't really missed him, with James Conner putting up several big games in Bell's absence. Look, I'm starting to think that Le'Veon Bell is a bit bothered by James Conner's success. And I think it's very easy to cheer from afar, and I'm in this contract dispute. But when you're looking at another man handle your business in your spot, I think it can bother you. And I think this farewell tweet was just trolling for attention. I think Le'Veon's a bit rattled here, and I wouldn't be surprised. I think he's kind of making it up as he goes. I don't know if he has a full game plan, and maybe he will sit out the entire season.
Oh, he's certainly shook. Let's just be real about this. That doesn't mean you hate on your former teammates or your current teammates. Think about this. You're sitting at home, you're watching the game. You want every single one of those guys to succeed. You just don't want them collectively to be better without you than if they are playing with you. So I've been in that situation before. You're not wishing the Steelers bad. You just don't want them to be better without you because you want to feel that impact, feel like, hey, I made the difference there. I got cut in San Diego, and I remember the next year getting ready and playing in Dallas, and some reason I'm at the hotel watching the Chargers play. We were 4-12 when I was there, and then we got released, cap move. I was making too much money. And then the next year, I look up, these dudes are 12-4. Now, I was sitting there like, I love you, LT. I love you, Drew Brees. I love every one of y'all. But I don't love what I'm seeing here because y'all are balling without me. I think Le'Veon's in that place right now where he doesn't want to see tremendous success without him because he wants to feel like I'm part of that reason why they're so successful.
I'm looking because I'm smiling because I wish I was one of those players like a Le'Veon Bell or Tony Gonzalez, but I just wasn't. And so, if I was one of those guys, and I'm going to ask Tony this question, I don't think Tony would mind. If he was sitting home and he had a contract dispute, because Tony knows he's one of the best, if not the best player at his position in the National Football League, he's going to get his money, whether it's in Pittsburgh or whether it's somewhere else. I don't think Le'Veon cares that this dude is balling. Is he balling? Absolutely. Do you wish, I wish maybe they don't do as good because when I come back, it'll be more pom-poms. But at the end of the day, Le'Veon made it known. Like, the reason I don't want to come now is because I don't want those 400 hits on my body. Right. And y'all just throw me away and say, we don't need you no more, because you showed me you didn't need me by not giving me a long-term deal. You just want to beat me down to the ground and then let me go. And so I don't think he cares, because he will get that money from somewhere, from somebody. He is an elite football player. And yes, the numbers might say that they're better without him there. I think part of that reason is because every team knows when Le'Veon Bell is in the game and in that backfield, he has a chance to hurt you. So everybody's eyes are always on Le'Veon Bell. They know where he is. James Conner is one of those flying to the radar guys until he's put up this season. Mm-hmm. But next year, guys are going to know who James Conner is too.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think it's all about how he's looking at it, if it's bothering him or not. And I'm going to steal from Greg Jennings last week. I thought he brought up a great point. You could look at that, and let's say I was holding out, and the tight end goes in there, and he starts putting up these amazing numbers. And I think all of us would take Le'Veon Bell over Conner. I mean, there's no question about that. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, imagine if I was there. Imagine what the numbers would be if I was there. Mm-hmm. But he's going to get paid. I said this last week. There's no way a team does not pay this guy. I think he gets close to what he wants, if not exactly what he wants. Honestly, I don't think he cares. If I was him, though, I'm not coming back at this point. I just probably wouldn't come back. I would just hold out the rest. And do what, though?
But you got to get you just have to come back to get the credited season. And that's why I felt like he turned down a lot of money. I myself would have been vindictive as hell. I would have signed that franchise tag, been there the first day. Oh, my hamstring hurt, coach. Oh, my ankle hurt, coach. I had a killer migraine. Mm-hmm. I'm coming up with stuff y'all have never heard before. I got gout. I can't go. Like, I'm gonna make an excuse for y'all not to be able to play me, but me still get my check. I'm not gonna cut my nose off to spite my face and give y'all half of that money back. No, because I can't get that back. And so he has to come by a certain point to get the accredited season and still be a free agent. If not, then his contract just stays exactly where it is, right, and he comes back as a
and then transition
guy.
Tag. Yeah, and they could do that again. Yeah.
So he has to come
somebody,
back.
Somebody, look, when I was going through free agency, a team told me before free agency, before you could, you are good. Do not worry. We'll take care of you. Here are the terms.
There's a difference, though.
No,
I'm telling you, there's a difference.
I'm saying, man, some team has. I'm not saying collusion, all that. I'm just saying some team has had to give this guy a security, his agent. Someone had to wink at him like,
man, he Le'Veon Bell.
Relax. You are good, Le'Veon Bell. For him to have this type of security, this is next level. He's not doing this on a whim. He's doing this because he knows something's guaranteed.
It's probably been 10, 15 teams have contacted him and his agents, his representation, through the whole process of being franchised and saying, hey, we tried to go in there and try to get you. We've offered this. We've offered that. This is where we're at contract-wise. Right. Because no team's trying to even get in that conversation.
Maybe it's the New England
unless
Patriots.
The money has already been worked out.
That would make me feel real good.
Yeah. I would have a hard time, though, coming back. And could you come back, sign the deal, these next six games, whatever they got, like six, seven games, and not play? I'm just going to sit around and not play?
I don't think he's not going to play. I don't think they would not dress him. I think they would try to work him in. Obviously, Conner would still be the starter, and I think Le'Veon and him would
what?
Just...
What?
Just,
that's what I'm saying. That's going to be a tough situation.
I mean, they have to. We
How
don't
long
even
have
know,
you been
don't...
an analyst? I mean, man, we get don't... back in that locker room. Ain't nobody letting no James Conner run on the field before Le'Veon Bell.
Are you kidding me? So you telling me... Well,
what?
Let's bet whatever on it. You telling me... Le'Veon's first week back, he's going to start off.
I wouldn't go first week just because they're going to work him in.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Okay, I'm saying they're going to work him in. I'm not saying in the playoffs they will be alternating.
That's for conditioning.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So I'm saying it's not a problem. When he gets there, the snaps will be worked out. I mean, he's
obviously. Yeah, you get none until he's tired. That's how
you get. I don't think he's going to come off the rip and just be the starter.
No.
Part of the reason I don't think he'll do that is I think they might lose that team if they try to do that. Mm. I think they're going to have to work him back in.
I'll give him a pitch count for 1 week, maybe 2 weeks. That is his.
I don't know if Tony answered the question directly or for enough for me. Hall of Fame tight end, this guy's a Hall of Fame running back. You sit out a year and somebody's out there putting up numbers slightly better than what you've ever done. Mm-hmm. You're not bothered by that at all?
For me personally, yeah, that would bother me a little
bit.
My whole holdout is basically saying you guys can't win without me. Emmitt Smith. Mm. This is not an Emmitt Smith situation right now. They needed Emmitt Smith to go to the Super Bowl. Right now they're showing they don't need you, Le'Veon. That's all there is to it. And that doesn't mean you're not a great player, but for whatever reason, kind of put a big – yeah, it would bother me a little bit. I would say it's kind of backfiring a little bit. Yeah.
It is backfiring a little bit, but I kind of – I like your point that someone has made it crystal clear.
Mm-hmm.
We got your money.
Oh, yeah.
I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley. Mm. Time to put on our thinking caps. This one's a little tight. Tony Gonzalez and D'Angelo Hall are back.
Don't blame that hat. Your hair did. Poor hat.
As you all know, I'm a journalist. Oh, wow, this is tight. I'm a journalist.
Itty bitty hat.
And we've got our resident Ivy Leaguer here, Marcellus Wiley from Columbia.
Thank you very much.
He's going to put on our thinking caps and take a deeper look at some big issues in sports. Darnell, bring the cap in for Marcellus. Sorry, uh-huh. You guys have to put up with this.
Where are your rose bearers? White buzz.
All right, let's move to Denver, where the Broncos have had a disappointing year with John Gruden's Oakland fire sale and the only thing keeping them out of the AFC West basement. Even still, John Elway says he's going to stay the course with Coach Van Joseph, despite the fact Joseph is 8-17 and in a season and a half at the helm. But he's not the only African-American coach struggling this year, with three of the six active coaches suffering through losing seasons, while one, Hugh Jackson, has already been fired. I think the optics of firing another black coach is probably the only thing keeping John Elway from moving on from Van Joseph. Mm. And I say that having watched the Broncos this past weekend and having watched Van Joseph do something at the end of the game, settle for a 50-yard field goal, horrible clock management, ran very few plays, ran the ball, and just, like, really, like, settled for a 50-yard field goal that cost him the game. And when that game was over, I was like, oh, John Elway's going to fire this dude.
Mm-hmm.
And then John Elway's come out with a vote of confidence. I don't think the optics would allow John Elway to make a move on Van Joseph until the end of the season. Elway's been caught up in some of the political conversation in recent months or in recent years. I don't think the NFL's in a place where they can fire African-American coaches back-to-back weeks midway through the season.
Oh, great argument, great premise. I don't think it applies to John Elway in particular and the Denver Broncos for two reasons. One, you bring up how that will look in optics. The blacklash, let's just say that, okay? I respectfully say that. How black players, black fans, black Twitter, whatever it is, gonna look at this and say, we only have six and you just fired two back-to-back in consecutive weeks? One, let's talk about the real plight of the white athlete. Why do I bring that up? Because John Elway's a former football player. Now, the plight of the white athlete, a mobile quarterback in the 80s, do you understand what he has dealt with and has gotten desensitized to, which is what you're talking about, is the reaction from black players, black people, because John Elway was running the football and throwing the football when they were telling black players, you need to play defense by doing the same thing. And he has had hell to pay for that in those times in the 80s and 90s. There's a little callous that builds to, like, I'm just going to do the right thing because I've been through this process. The second reason, which is really the reason why he's not going to fire him, is because it's a business decision. I am not going to fire the coach and give Case Keenum an opt out of some leash, a reset button where someone's going to sit there and say, oh, now let's properly evaluate Case Keenum. If I'm John Elway, I don't fire anybody around Case Keenum because when the end of the season occurs, Case Keenum got to go, and Vance Joseph has to go in a clean sweep. I do not want to reset my franchise quarterback, as they're all calling him that.
I mean, I think the bottom line is John Elway's looking like, I messed this up. Like, this ain't totally on Vance Joseph. This is on me, because Case Keenum, like, John Elway to be this great quarterback, he sure can't pick him. I mean, it's crazy the quarterbacks they've had since Peyton, and none of them seem to be able to play.
Yeah.
Even Case Keenum. Case Keenum diced us up when he was with Minnesota, myself personally. And I'm looking like, man, this dude's really legit. Like, it blows my mind why Pat Shurmur didn't take him and say, Eli, bye, and take Case Keenum to New York to run his offense, because Case Keenum was a very capable quarterback. And so now I go to the coaches. Who's coaching him? Who's the quarterback coach? Who's the offensive coordinator? Are they developing him? Because obviously, Case Keenum can't do what they want him to do in Denver, But he was able to do what Pat Sherman wanted him to do in Minnesota. And so I think John's at a point where he's like, look, I can't fire Vance because some of this is my fault. Like, this quarterback is bad. He's worse than what we thought he was. And I think the proof is in watching him play. Like, he's not playing anywhere close to who they thought he was going to be when they signed him. And you're right. They don't want to reset that clock on him.
Hell no.
And then they don't have a replacement, I think.
D'Angelo, part of the argument I heard from you, though, is that he's not being as coached as well as what Pat Shurmur was doing for him in Minnesota as it relates to Case Keenum. And so, therefore, I've seen very few executives who ever blame themselves.
Oh, they never will.
And so I don't see John Elway blaming himself. What I see from executives is like, man, I gave you the good ingredients. You've just messed up the cake. And that's what I think at the end of the year John Elway is going to say to this coaching staff.
Well, John Elway is a competitor. Obviously, he likes to win. He's had experience with it, you know, as a player and as an executive. But I put it to you, like, if I bought a car and the car is out there and I've been driving it for a year and a half, however long Vance has been there, and it starts to break down a little bit, and I'm like, you know what, I really don't want this car anymore. I can't get rid of it right away until I have a new car.
Yeah.
Okay, I got to have a replacement ready to go. And I think for sure, probably at the end of the season, Vance will probably not be there. I just don't know what is your better choice. What is your better option? It makes no sense to fire him right now unless you got somebody who can come in there and make the job even better. You're not proving a point, and I think John Elway gets that. So if I'm him, yeah, at the end of the season, we're going to evaluate it. Let's see if you can turn it around. If you can't, then you're gone anyway. I trust me, he's looking, though. He is absolutely looking for the next piece.
Did anybody besides me watch that game last week and see the end of the game decision-making? And then there was a – do we have the tape of what Bill O'Brien actually said? Oh, Bill O'Brien, we don't have this tape, but Bill O'Brien actually said right before halftime, he called – Vance Joseph an idiot, but he didn't do it that politely. As he's running into the locker room at halftime, they've made some decisions right before halftime. He tried to ice the kicker, Vance Joseph. They missed the kick, but they get a re-kick because the guy called a timeout, and then he makes the field goal. And as he's running into the locker room, Bill O'Brien basically calls this dude an idiot in no uncertain terms, much more profanely than I just did. And so, and then at the end of the game, it was just mind-blowing. They had a timeout. They had a, I think they only ran two plays with like a minute left on the clock and a timeout. And one of the plays was a run up the middle where they lost yardage. And I'm like, this guy is settling for a 50-yard. It's the most, it's one of them deals where you just go, he just don't get it. I'm moving on. And so I get it. Maybe there's no upside to firing a coach midseason, but teams do it all the time. And I think Elway's under some unseen optical pressure not to make a move on Vance Joseph.
Yeah, well, it's not a fireable offense to ice the kicker and he misses it and then come back and some coach clowns you for doing that.
Yeah.
We've seen that happen before. But at the end of the game, even John Elway said post-game that, you know what, I'm glad he played it that way in respect of not making a mistake. We could not make a mistake in that moment. Hey, the ball was there. We had a 51-yard field goal. Go out there and make the field goal. You make that field goal, we don't have
in the wind, this
conversation.
At Mile High.
Mile High helps a 51-yard field goal.
Not those windy conditions.
I get you. But those are not fireable offenses. But to your question, is race a factor? I don't feel it is. Tony nailed it as well. You don't want to go out there and say, we fire our coach, and then we just bring in some interim coach, and then for what? And then two, Case Keenum, man, I just know that this was one of those free agency moves that we just got to get a quarterback. Not necessarily the one we wanted. They wanted Kirk Cousins. Uh-huh. You go all the way back. Colin Kaepernick. Well, I mean, good Lord. I don't think race is a factor in that conversation about who to play the quarterback position at all.
I'm going to go back to y'all putting this Case Keenum decision on John Elway, and I'm another idiot that was like Elway and like D'Angelo. I saw Case Keenum make plays last year and look like a guy, not a franchise quarterback, but a guy you give a little less than $20 million to and you can win with if you have a great defense. This is another thing where I'm critical of Vance and that coaching staff. They're not getting anything out of Case Keenum, and he's better than what he's shown this year. And so I blame that on the coaches.
I mean, I think we're all under agreement that Vance Joseph will be fired when the season's over.
Yeah.
But I think where we differ in opinion is you think he should go now, and we just are saying that it's simply I don't see anybody on that roster or on that staff to really jump in and be a catalyst. I mean, because even you take the Cleveland Browns situation, like Greg Williams, for all his faults, he will have those guys motivated and ready to play. I mean, he's not going to affect the offense, but just knowing Greg's mentality, like he's totally different than what Hugh Jackson is. And so they're gonna see how their team responded under Hugh and the nice, fun-loving guy, and now how they respond under just a tough, hard-nosed dude who don't care and will talk trash to you up and down, you know, mm-hmm. is Greg Williams' style of coaching. So you'll be able to evaluate your guys, you know, just depending on those two styles of coaching. I don't know all the coaches in Denver to say there's a different guy than Vance Joseph's personality to say let's fire him now and see what we have second half of the season. But I do think when the season's over, I do think Vance is gone. And so that's what makes me say the optics don't matter. If he's black or white, it's a production-based business, and he'll be fired.
All right, thank you, Tony. Thank you, D'Angelo. Whitlock and Wiley, we're joined now by Fox NBA analyst Iceberg Jim Jackson.
What up?
Let's move to Denver, where the Nuggets continue their hot start to the year with Jamal Murray putting up 48 points in a win over the Celtics. With the game in hand, Murray launched up a three as time expired to try and get to 50, which Kyrie Irving didn't seem to appreciate very much. Throwing the ball into the stands, Kyrie was fined $25,000 today. After the game, he had some strong words for Murray.
I mean, what kind of competitor wouldn't it bother? You know what I'm saying? So, like, I understand we fouled him going to the free throw line. I don't want to make a big deal. Obviously, I was pissed off at the game, but it's time to decompress and move on. Congratulations to him having 48 points. You know, he did it in a great fashion against us. You know, our defense has to be better, especially against a player like that, mid pick and roll. You know, he was a primary concern tonight, and, you know, he made us pay in certain instances of just making some tough shots and some tough layups. And, you know, but the ball deserves to go in the crowd after a bullshit move like that. So, do it in the crowd.
I think he's doing too much here, and I don't have a problem with Murray trying to get 50.
Come on.
I don't have a
problem. Come on, man.
Oh, here you go.
What?
Come on, Slim. What you talking about?
You can't do that.
Why not? What?
The game is over.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
I ain't hear the buzzer.
Okay, so you telling me last night when the Titans had the ball and they wanted to need it, they should have just threw a wide receiver out there and scored another touchdown?
That's always an agreement that I have to sign. And if I've
hold on, you wouldn't be pissed if you was the other team?
Oh, no, I've been on the other side. Like, hey, bro, we still trying to get this.
What? So you telling me it's okay?
Yes.
So you telling me as a head coach, you would advocate that if you're up and you're faking like you're going to take a knee, you're going to throw a touchdown?
I'm going to show you right now. Next time you watch a play like that, they always come to the line. They'd go like this. And there have been times when cats are like, you better stay
but
up.
How many times did that happen?
It doesn't matter. I have to sign your agreement. If not, we are still in the field of play.
It's old school, bro.
I'm old like you. Stop acting like that.
Come on.
All that gray. Don't let your gray fool you. I'm your age.
Here's my thing. It's because of it, we know you got 48. We know you want to get 50. We're not playing defense on you right now. Just dribble the ball out. Just dribble the ball out. If you get your 50 on the layup and the shot clock is going down, you go back door and you lay it up, fine. But if you're going to sit there and dribble, and then try to play it off like it's the end of the game and you want to shoot it, that's not acceptable.
Jim, let me explain the difference between
you can't.
Why the football and the basketball thing is different.
Why?
Again, football stats really matter in terms of you throw an extra touchdown on, it changes the defensive statistics, adds yards. No, this guy throws up a meaningless three. It's meaningless to everybody involved on both sides. It's not going to change Boston's defensive statistics. There's no defensive back that's going to get credited with, oh, you got burned and gave up that touchdown. If he hits that shot, no one cares other than Jamal Murray. Doesn't make a difference in the final score. Again, I get why Kyrie's doing it, but I just feel like he overreacted. The guy had a chance to get 50 points. You had given up. You acting like you don't care. So if he throws up a shot, who cares?
Yeah, here's the difference.
Here's
the difference.
Defend yourself.
I agree with you, but it's still a level of disrespect. Because if you're on the defensive end and they throw a touchdown over the top and you've won the game, you're going to be mad. I don't care what you say. You're
going to
be pissed.
Am I out there jogging?
Who?
Why am I out there lackadaisical to the program?
It's a sign of disrespect. Here's my thing about it, too. It's because, listen, if I'm going to give it to you, go get your 50, bro. You played the game. I get it. I get it. But for you to dribble the ball, dribble. If you go get your 50, go ahead and shoot the ball early on in the shot clock. Go ahead and shoot it. But don't dribble all the way down to the last few seconds and act like, you know what, I'm just going to throw this up here to see if I make it or not. If you go do it early in the shot clock. Man, why you want to wait?
Man, that's sensitive. Like, I ain't never seen
it. You're right. All the way down to technicality.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. Hey, you better shoot it. If not, then this game is over. But it ain't over yet. You heard me, right?
But that's how it is.
Jimmy, let me say this. Okay. There's something in marketing. There's something in business, the 99-cent effect. It's a difference between going for 48 and going for 50. There's a difference with consumers if something's for 99 cents or it's for a dollar.
Right.
And that's why they say everything is $9.99, $8.99. You're like, oh, that's only $8.99. It's $9, really. And this dude is like, 48 is close, but you know what? It's going to be different if I go out there and get 50. And ain't nothing wrong when there's still time on that clock and you still
a full mind,
body, and soul to stand in front of me and defend me if you want to.
No,
if
but
not,
that's,
take
but
these he, buckets.
But here's the thing. The 99-cent rule works because I know when I go in there, it's going to cost me 99 cents, and that's what I'm going to spend. That's the difference. With 48, he got there, okay? He still had two more to get.
The 48 sound the same as 50?
No.
Thank you. That's why he shot it.
But my point is, I don't care. If he gets 50 in the course of the game, dog, you did your thing. But to sit there when you know the defense, that's when Chris Paul tried to do the same thing.
Yeah, I remember that.
And still. Okay.
Yep.
And here's a veteran in the league to try to do it. And the team that he played against felt it was disrespectful.
Here's my point, though, Jim. If the Celtics fell to 6-4 last night, if they had fallen to 8-2.
They still would have been pissed.
I don't think Kyrie Irving's upset at all. Kyrie Irving is upset about the disappointing start to the season. Gordon Hayward needs to be on the bench. Mm-hmm. They can't do nothing about it.
I agree with you.
I
agree with you on
this
that.
This isn't what he done started at the beginning of the year. I'm coming back next year. I'm signing a long-term extension. And it's going to be utopia here in Boston. And now he's looking around like, man, Gordon Hayward, is he going to be all right? Mm-hmm. I think Gordon's like 30 years old, and he don't look
the
same.
Kyrie started slow this season as well.
I get the frustration on Kyrie's, and you can see it in his body language because things don't happen. As you know, Marcellus, coming back off an injury, you just can't jump back into where you were rhythm-wise. And plus, you know, think about it. The roles have changed for a lot of guys that play for Boston right now. The ball is in the hand of Jason Tatum a lot more. So it's a little bit different. I know the frustration was there. I still do think that Kyrie would have been upset, even if they were 8-2, 10-0, that at that point in the game, bro, you don't need to do it. You really don't. You got your 48.
Okay, so is this conversation over, or can I get another word in, or is that too much?
Clock is a zero. Clock is a zero. You can do whatever you want.
I'm just a guest. I'm just a
guest. Game over.
Game over, right? Thanks, conversation Jim. Over.
Right. My favorite segment of the show. Time to get antisocial, Marcellus. Right.
Do it, brother.
With our social media manager, Darnell Smith, here to walk us onto these Twitter streets.
All right.
Got my Twitter off. Got a fresh new can.
Yeah.
Darnell, what's popping on those Twitter streets?
Oh, man, we're going to start off with Monday Night Football, where the Cowboys lost to the Titans. Dak was intercepted in the end zone by Kevin Byard, who took a page out of the T.O. handbook and ran to the store in the middle of the field to celebrate. T.O. decided to chime in on Twitter saying, quote, "I feel like I've seen this before." Do y'all think Byard was trying to pay tribute to T.O.? Was he just trying to get likes?
No, I think he saw the Joe Horn thing from Michael Thomas the day before.
Yep.
And now he's shouting out T.O. As I've told, everybody's obsessed with Twitter and social media, and all the athletes are performing for tweets and relikes and follows.
Relikes.
I actually kind of like
relikes.
Relikes. Is that what it is?
You put retweets. Something new on Twitter. How old are you? Well, a lot of pushback from you saying that yesterday because T.O. did this when there was no social media to that degree, obviously. And Joe Horn, there was no social media. So the origins of this is not social media based. That said, we've heard a lot of complaints of this organization. They need changes upstairs. We heard a lot of complaints. They need new coaches.
How about some just damn Cowboys pride? I mean, just about where's the player? I don't care who's the goon on the squad. Somebody to stop this. Just like when T.O. did it, someone went out there and stopped
I think one player did come out there by himself. Last name Jones. I don't know
his
first
name. Did he knock
him down like T.O. got him? He gave him a little soft little push.
Look, I was with the Cowboys for 97 days, and I would have been the dude that went out there and made sure this wouldn't happen on my
You from
Cowboys. Look, let me tell you what happened. Let me tell you what happened, to be honest with you.
What?
That was after Dak's interception. Everybody was shocked. Like, why the hell did you throw that ball? They weren't thinking about Kevin Byard. They were thinking about Dak.
Right.
And somebody was probably on that Cowboys sideline ready to stomp on Dak Star. That was the issue.
Good point.
All right, Good Darnell, what's next?
All right, moving on to everyone's favorite family, the Balls.
Yeah, my boy.
Right.
My boy.
Slam Online broke the news today that after spending the last year playing professional ball in Lithuania, LaMelo will be returning to high school playing at the prep school in Ohio. He's expected to make his debut on November 13th. Do you guys think LaMelo will, you know, end up in the NBA someday?
Before I answer that question, I want to defend this, Marcellus.
Defend what?
He's going to Ohio to play high school basketball. LeVar has screwed this up.
Oh, wow.
He's been to Lithuania, now Ohio. LeVar has screwed this up, admit it.
Where's all this smoke when your cousin say, baby, I'm about to go get my GED? You like, I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of you. You ain't got them jokes then, so don't have no joke for this kid. Look, he went forward, went back, two step forward, one step back, and now he's going to take two steps forward. He will make it to the NBA. There are some sorry players in the NBA, and this is a damn good player who just needs to get back on track, especially in terms of recruiting and in terms of being a prospect. Once that occurs...
He's a train wreck. He's already jeopardized his college eligibility with the Lithuania stuff.
Hold on. We're trying to jeopardize college basketball by saying we don't want one and dones. We want none and dones. This kid will be a none and done. He still will get his opportunity because he can still shoot from anywhere in the gym. Respect to him, man. And tell your cousin coming about here.
This is a train wreck.
Leave that LaMelo
ball. All right, go ahead, Darnell. What's next?
All right, sticking with the subject of the NBA. Where players are constantly showing up to games in some very questionable outfits, especially Russell Westbrook, who's known for his crazy pregame fashion. Mm. Well, apparently a guy who was infamous for rocking chains and do-rags back in the day, Allen Iverson, isn't a fan of today's pregame fashion. Take a listen.
Do-rag and a hat and some chains.
Yeah,
and
that's it.
Baggy clothes or whatever. And you see these dudes, this that they went out and to each his own. Taking no shots at me because I ain't taking, yes I am. But that's what the dress code is supposed to be implemented now. This is real. Man, this is Halloween every night.
Does AI have a point here or is he just turned to the grumpy old man?
You know what? I think he's got a great point. Because I was somebody when AI was showing up in do-rags and white t-shirts and gold chains, I was like, man, they need a dress code.
Mm.
Now it's gotten so crazy, I am kind of like, man, I wish they'd go back to do-rags, white t-shirts, and gold chains. Because they do way too much.
No, man, look, it's a little grumpy old man in there. Look, these kids and these guys are walking from their car, from the bus to the locker room. They're not sitting there on the sidelines wearing all that craziness. On the sidelines, they're kind of buttoned up, correct?
Yeah.
So they don't need no dress code. It was just a way to get some good jokes off. And we don't want to go back to the 9X t-shirts. We do not. Well, you do. That's how you roll. But I'm just saying, I do not. Man, in my closet, I got size 70 jerseys. Like, just insanely big. Nah, man. He sound like grumpy old man.
Y'all just hate on the swag, man. It's the new age.
Yeah.
You know, I like the new stuff. I've had a love-hate relationship with Allen Iverson for years. When he first got into the NBA, Vibe magazine sent me to do a profile on AI. Mm. And I chased him all over the country trying to get him to consent to an interview.
Man.
And he never did it.
Wow.
And then one night, him and his boys are outside my hotel room door carrying on the craziest conversation about Michael Jordan. And I set my recorder down and recorded it. And use that for my story and Vibe.
Did he agree to that? Or
no, he did not. But he was talking about crossing over Jordan and all this. It was crazy.
That
it was
counts.
Good stuff.
Okay.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
Sneaky little dude.
Right.
Sneaky dude over here.
What do you gotta do, huh?
I gotta watch myself at lunch.
Right. All right, last but not least, watching the herd this morning, and our guy Colin did his famous herd hierarchy and had the Saints number one again. Take a listen.
We had him number one last week before the Rams game, and we've got him number one right now, the Saints. So that defense is better than the Rams and the Patriots, and that offensive line is as good as the Rams and better than the Patriots. Saints, number one.
Do y'all agree with Colin?
Listen, I think after what they just did to the Rams, you have no choice but to put the Saints at number one. I think if you listen to me on this show, appropriately tell you, Patrick Mahomes, close your ears, Drew Brees is the best quarterback in football right now. They have a great defense. They got the best quarterback in football right now. They have a Super Bowl winning coach. How could you not rank the Saints number one?
Here you go again, revisionist. I remember we had a conversation. You taking Peyton and Brees, or you taking McVay and Goff? And I was the only one on here testifying for Brees and Peyton, was I not?
Yes, you were.
Yes, I was. See, I got a recorder on you, too. The point is, I would say with home field advantage, I would say asterisk, they have to be in the dome. You bring that same team, you bring that same dynamic on the road, they have to play in L.A. at the Coliseum. I'm not so certain because the crowd noise is such a factor in how that they're playing this year. So I would say slight edge still to the Rams, especially when they get healthy. Talib back is going to change that pass defense.
The most interesting thing on Cowherd's hierarchy, he dropped the Rams all the way to number five.
Oh, no.
Behind the Chiefs, the Patriots, the Saints were number one. I can't remember who. Chargers were number four.
Okay.
He's got the Rams behind the Chargers.
The team now that they already beat. Like, think about that. Chargers already lost to the Rams, but they're behind them already. Interesting.
Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval rating for Dak Prescott. Uncle
Becky,
Jimmy, welcome
please
back.
Hurry up.
Oh, my
please.
God. Look
please.
At you.
Oh, my God.
Is that what you wear to barbecue?
what are you in such a hurry for?
Yeah, where you going?
Man, how many times we done talked about this, man? This ain't my only job, man. I got other jobs I got to get to, all right?
How's the benefits over there at the fire department?
Hey, man, okay, you're trying to be funny. I'm a public servant, all right?
Should you be wearing a gold chain around all that fire? Especially when it's fake.
Look at me, while you cracking jokes or something, just let you know something. I've been laying holes out in these streets for a long time now, okay? All right? I've been serving the public for a while now, all right?
Okay, hot stuff.
All right, yeah.
Hold it.
Stay out of my personal business.
All right, hot stuff.
Earlier in the show, we had a conversation about Dak Prescott. Want to get your reaction to it, but here we are early in the show talking about Dak.
Are we sure?
Marcellus, am I wrong? Jason Garrett a bigger problem than Dak Prescott.
Yeah, you're wrong. I'm sorry, I was a little distracted because your topic sentence was amazing and your thesis was amazing. Here's your topic sentence. Dak Prescott was terrible last night. All right, respect. And here's your thesis. Dak Prescott was awful. Okay. Why else talk? Like, what else are you talking about? You're blaming the sidelines, the same sidelines that, 3 years ago made Dak Prescott.
How does Dak Prescott disappear from the running game? He had been a big part of the running game, and they had committed to that, and then, boom, it goes away. Obviously, I was on the right side of that argument, Uncle Jimmy. I'm sure you're going to back me up here. He's trying to put all the blame on Dak Prescott. It's not all on Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott can still be a very good quarterback.
Marcellus.
Yes, sir, sir.
What did I tell you yesterday?
Oh, I forgot.
The only reason I watched the show is what? Because of you.
Because of me.
Because of you. Ain't got nothing to do with the words that's coming out of my nephew's mouth.
Okay.
I mean, am I right or wrong?
So you agree with me today?
Huh?
You agree with me today, yeah.
I agree with you today. Once again, my nephew, believe it or not, America, my nephew wrong. Lord, have mercy. Jason Whitlock don't know what he's talking about. Have mercy. Dak Prescott, just another example.
A hot mess, huh?
A hot mess.
I put him out.
Look, I got to give him credit. He's been telling me all year, even last year, that I'm too high on Dak Prescott. He's never liked Dak Prescott.
Why? Why?
Yeah, I want to hear this.
Oh, you're going to like this. You're going to like this.
What is it?
It's in his name.
Dak?
It's in his name.
Dak Prescott.
What's in his name? What's in the man's name?
D-A-K.
Here, let me show you something. Marcellus. It say right here, a man from Compton,
yes,
South Chicago, or Atlanta, one or the other.
What that got to do with Dak Prescott?
Yeah, what's that?
If you say Dak Prescott, uh-oh, what that sound like?
I'm listening.
Somebody from the Civil War?
You said his name too old.
Somebody who signed the Declaration of Independence. What's in the name, man?
What do you mean, Dak?
What's in the name? I mean, give me a quarterback. Just feel me on this for a minute. Okay. Give me a quarterback who can walk into death row. Walk into death row, walk into cash money. He ain't got to change his name. Deshaun Jackson.
Deshaun Watson.
Either one of them ain't got to change their name.
Boy, that's death row if you making Deshaun
Jackson.
Wait
a minute. What's the boy's name from Baltimore?
Lamar Jackson.
Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
My boy from Kansas City. Mm. Patrick Mahomes.
Patrick what?
Them is quarterback
Patrick
names.
What?
Patrick Mahomes. Them's quarterback names. Dak Prescott.
Oh, you ain't right.
Dak Prescott? Yeah. Civil War. Probably the wrong side.
Hey, man, don't take that protest that far. Him and Jerry together on that.
We got to get to our approval ratings.
Do we have to?
Yes, we do. We have to get to our approval ratings. We have to get to our approval ratings. Ain't nothing wrong with Dak Prescott's name. All right, job performance, a 4. I'm dropping him down to a 4. All-time greatness to a 2. Character, a 22, still high on his character. Coming down a little bit on the authenticity, Dak. You got to, just something about it just don't feel right. 46 overall for Dak Prescott.
Damn. And you high on him? That is horrible. <It's> Look, you right around where I am. I got him at a 48. Obviously, the job performance has to drop tremendously. They still haven't figured it out which way is up for him. All-time greatness, 3. Look, you're a Dallas Cowboys quarterback, and you play for this many years, and you're going to have a future there. We'll remember you, but not for
man,
the
look,
great
hold, excuse me, Wait. Hold on. Uh-huh. I got to tell y'all this, because y'all missing the whole point. Y'all missing the whole damn thing. Let me explain this to y'all, man.
And you gotta be quick. We running out of time.
Nothing is going to happen good to Dak Prescott. Nothing ain't never gonna happen to him because of what he did to the guy, Colin Kaepernick. Oh. Ever since he talked to ill on Colin Kaepernick, ain't nothing good gonna happen to him. Tell me I'm wrong. Tell me I'm wrong.
That's the original Kaepernick over there. He's the original Kaepernick.
Man.
He is a Colin Kaepernick.
So good.
But now we out of time. Marcellus, you only had him at a 48. I'm lower than you.
Yeah, you are. Look at you. I've convinced you, huh? I realize it.
Everything you do.
You coming.